G'day guys, welcome to WCL 416, apparently. It's not actually 407, I was just told that. This is the PowerShell for Config Manager 2012 SP1 session. You're all ready to see some dodgy code? Yeah? Awesome. I'm not a developer, I'm a PFE, a Config Manager PFE. For those who haven't actually worked with PFEs before, and they're non-Premier customers, generally, we attend on site with you guys and with our partners, basically to try and help you do your jobs better. It's mostly reactive work, so there'll be workshops, there'll be training sessions, there'll be health checks, that sort of thing. As a PFE, we generally only take one or two technologies. My technology is only Config Manager. I do a little bit of dabbling in Service Manager, but not many people really know what Service Manager is or how to use it. And I'm trying to pick up PowerShell, so I haven't had 15 years worth of PowerShell experience, so all my scripts today I wrote, and if I could write them, all you guys should be able to as well. Let's get started. In terms of an agenda, I know that PowerShell isn't generally a technology that you guys as Config Manager engineers and admins will really use in a day-to-day basis at the moment. So we'll do a 3-minute intro to PowerShell, which will go for maybe 10 minutes. We'll go over what is PowerShell, why do we have PowerShell, and then how do we use it. They're all going to be slide-based stuff. I do have a few demos in there. PowerShell integration with Config Manager. Again, this is new with SP1, so we'll actually go through how you load up the module and connect to your Config Manager sites. And then a bit of a background in what we can do with it. We're not going to go through every PowerShell commandlet that's referenced for the Config Manager module. We're just going to go through some cool ones. I suppose the point of today's session is to get you guys aware that there is a module and get you thinking about how we can be using it to actually automate some of this some of the boring stuff you don't like to do within the console. So the bulk of today's session is going to be around the demo stuff. So I've got three scenario-based demos, each one getting a little bit more complex. And then at the end, we've got five bonus demos. So these are going to be one little, one-line commandlet styles that that we can sort of run and get in quick and dirty and get back out. In terms of questions, I did my timings. It went to about right on an hour, so we should have some time for questions later. If I run a little bit long, then we'll just take questions offline. But if everyone's happy, we'll just get back into it. All right, so my 3-minute intro into PowerShell. I'm assuming everybody's run open the PowerShell console at some point, yeah? Everybody has opened up that little blue box and knows that it's on their system. And we've all tried to manage Windows systems without PowerShell. It's pretty crap, right? Writing batch scripts, writing VB scripts is something that you guys don't want to do. So why do we develop PowerShell? And that's it. We want to be able to manage our Windows operating systems better. We also found that with larger data centers in terms of virtualization became so popular so quickly, and all of a sudden now one Exchange server turned into four Exchange servers, and we've got DCs everywhere because it's so easy to run them up. We need to be able to manage those larger data centers without having to log on to every single one of those machines. We also needed a common language for OS and applications. So any Exchange guys in the room will just love EMS, the Exchange Management Shell. And with 2007 Exchange, I believe there was more functionality from the command line shell than there was actually in the console. So now that we've got this really good, powerful language, we can we can start to manage not only our Windows operating systems, but our applications too. And in this presentation, the Config Manager application. Finally, and nobody wants to write VB script or batch anymore. It's not 1997. So what is PowerShell? PowerShell came around the same time Vista came, so it's been around for a while. I know we all sort of dealt with Vista in our own special ways, but PowerShell has continued on, and it's still being updated. I think we got PowerShell V4 coming out very, very soon, which is going to do a whole bunch of extra things as well. And it was designed from scratch by the Windows OS team. So these are the guys who write the operating system in Redmond, wanted a shell that they can run across. That's very similar to a Unix shell. We used to cop it all the time from the Unix guys that we can write Python and Perl and all that sort of stuff. We now have a similar, not quite as there yet, but we've got a similar sort of way of automating this sort of stuff from a proper shell and from some proper scripts. Of course, it's extendable. We're going to see it today with our Config Manager. Of course, we've got AD integration. We've got most of our applications these days. Windows applications have got PowerShell integration. And the last two ones are very developer lines. It's an object-oriented language, which doesn't mean a lot to me or probably you guys either. We'll see some objects and stuff a little bit later, and you'll see, hey, this is pretty cool. But most importantly, it leverages the .NET object model. So this means that whatever we can do in .NET, we can do within PowerShell. So .NET has been around for donkey's years, and it's super powerful. It's built into Windows these days. And if we can grab a .NET object into PowerShell, we can do it from a PowerShell script. And we'll see some of the Windows form stuff a little bit later as well. So that's what PowerShell is. How do we use it? So commandlets are the guts of PowerShell. Everybody would have seen a commandlet like this before, get-service. They're in a verb noun configuration, so we want to get something, we want to do something, we want to create something. And they're basically compiled .NET code in most cases. There are some exceptions to that, but generally they're going to be compiled .NET code, and they're there to perform a specific function. So in this particular instance, we just want to list all our services on the particular system. It gets as simple as that. And as I was saying about objects, objects make things so incredibly easy. We can wrap up all the return. We're not looking at a batch scripts where we're just returning strings, just plain text. We're actually wrapping these up into objects so that we can perform some other function onto them. So now that we know what PowerShell is and we're all familiar with it, let's go on to the first demo. This is the most basic demo you're ever going to see at a tech ed. So there's two ways we can run PowerShell. The first way will be our little blue box that everybody knows about. So we can see it's a PowerShell because it's blue. We can change this, and some people change it to black, but I like it to blue, so I know I'm either in a command line or I'm in a PowerShell. My preferred way of using any sort of PowerShell scripts or command line is to actually use the ISE. So the ISE came with Windows 7 SP1 by default, Manesh? Yep. So all we need to do is open up this ISE. ISE stands for Integrated Scripting Environment. It gives us a lot more power in terms of actually writing scripts and testing our code. So the first thing we can see is the top left, which is the untitled PS1. This is the area that we can type our code into. At the bottom, we're going to run it, so it's just like a command line shell. And we can see down the right, we've got, this is the newest version of PowerShell, the PowerShell ISE anyway. We've got all the commandlets that are available for us. So it's a really easy way for us to run it open. But this demo is around the get service. You can see we get some nice autocomplete there as well. And the newer version gives us a whole bunch of extra information around it. But this is going to be the simplest demo you'll ever see, get service. So straight away, we can see that that command has run really quickly, and it's returned a whole bunch of services. We can see that it's giving us a status in terms of running or stopped, our name, and also our display name. So while that's pretty simple, we're not really doing much with it at the moment. So what I want to actually do is store all of these particular objects into a variable. So the next thing I want to do is just create a simple variable. So we don't have to do a dim or anything like that with VBScript. We just call all services. That'll do. I can hit F5 to run that script, and it's going to run. So we haven't returned anything here because we've saved all of the output of this particular commandlet into our all services variable. If I then want to see my services, all I need to do is run all services down here, just return that object, and we can see them all again. Okay? Now the next thing I want to do is actually find specific services and return those into a variable. So what we're going to do is grab the display name property. So we're going to go get service. This time we're going to go display. I think it's display name. Get services. Let's go get service. And we'll see display name. So we can see again the properties that are available for us. And all I want to do is see all my Hyper-V services. So we can see in the display name down here, they're all going to be Hyper-V something. So I'm just going to wildcard that, and I'm going to go Hyper. And if I run this, all I should be doing is returning any service that's got a Hyper-V or Hyper in the actual display name. Another tip is when you select that particular line up here, we can run a single line of code rather than running a whole script by just hitting F8 or using that little run line here. So we can see that we've got six services return that have Hyper in the display name here. We can, of course, pipe that out to a variable as well. So let's go Hyper-V services and store all of that in there. Again, we can just run this particular variable. And now that we've got that object, we can start doing some things with it. So if we look at, for example, we want to get a count of the particular Hyper-V services, we can just go count. And we're going to get six. So straight away, we're not writing batch code. We're not writing a net start, stops, all that sort of get services. We've got one line of code to show me how many services that are Hyper-V enabled. We can also do some work on those services. So if we want to stop and start these services, all we need to do is pipe that particular object into our stop service. So if we want to stop our Hyper-V services, for example, we pipe it to stop service. And for the demo, I'll just show you our services console, make sure I'm not cheating. Go down to Hyper-V, we can see that they're all running down here. If we want to pipe those six services, just those six services, into our stop service, we can run that. It's going to run, lickety-split, F5, and we see they're all stopped. Of course, we want to start those. And we'll start them back up again. There we go. So this is really, really simple stuff, but you can see how powerful and how quick this sort of thing can be. You want to stop the print spooler service on five different servers. So you can either RDP to those five servers, or we can just run a remote PowerShell call. Cool. Simple demo. So at the end of every demos, I've got a key commandlets screen. This one isn't very interesting for you, but I've also got demo scripts URL as well. So you can get the deck and you'll get all the video on the blogs at the end of the session. But if you want to play along, I've got the demo scripts for each demo on these particular URLs. So we've seen some really basic stuff in terms of how PowerShell works. We know why it works, but we want to see some sort of PowerShell integration. So the first thing we need to talk about is what's required. So there's a hard requirement of PowerShell 3. The module won't even import. If you're using any down-level version of PowerShell, so you must have PowerShell version 3. PowerShell version 3 has got a list of requirements here as well. So PowerShell 3 only supports Windows 7 SP1, which you're probably all on at the moment. But if you've got a Windows XP machine that you're still sitting there running, you're not going to be able to run these commandlets. There's a bunch of requirements there, like .NET Framework 4, obviously. The most simple thing to do is install the Windows Management Framework, the newest version, and you'll have access to all of these particular features. The second thing we need in terms of requirements is our Config Manager 2012 SP1 console. Again, this integration and the features came with SP1, so if you're running RTM version of Config Manager, you won't have access to it. So the console actually has to be installed on the machine you're running scripts from. So if you're going to be running these scripts in batch on a build server or on a server that's going to be doing all this work for you, you need to make sure that we have the Config Manager console installed. And finally, I've put down CU2 update. It's not required to run the PowerShell commandlets. We don't need the CU2. We don't need the CU1. But we've got extra Config Manager commandlets that were enabled with the CU updates. Particularly CU1, there was like 80 extra new commandlets with the CU1 update. So I'd be suggesting running that. I don't think any of my scripts require, or the scripts have commandlets that came with CU1, but just install it. So once we've got the PowerShell installed, we've got the Config Manager console installed, we need to connect. So the first thing we need to do is import the Config Manager module. So you need to run this every single time you're going to run any script against your Config Manager site. And that's the import -module commandlet. You can see that the .psd1 file is the one that we're looking for. And interestingly, we've got x86 here as well. This is important because we can't run any Config Manager scripts on the 64-bit version of PowerShell. So we need to run the ISE or the PowerShell console itself as the x86 version of the executable, not 64-bit. So our console is only x86, Config Manager 2012 server and roles, 64-bit, console is 32-bit. So after we've imported the module, we then need to set our location. So we type set-location and then the site code of our primary site. So this needs to be a CAS or a primary. You can't connect to a secondary site. In my demos here, I've just got a standalone primary site. It's just going to be connected, and my site code is just going to be PRY. And the last thing I like to do is just run the test connection as well. So if I'm just going to get CM site, we'll see that we're connected and we'll see some site code. Again, I'll quickly build out this demo in a couple of minutes as well. So once we've connected, what can we do? So most functions, in fact, some more functions than what we have available in the console. So if you can go and create a collection, we can create a collection from PowerShell. If you want to add a package to a DP, we can do it from PowerShell. In saying that, though, it's not quite finished. So you'll see that now that the System Center team have moved over to CU-based updates and more regular updates, we're going to see more and more commandlets come. But you know, we're kind of just happy that we've got it at the moment after years of not having any real scripting, other than the SDK. Who wants to write in the SDK? Well, not me. All the Config Manager commandlets are quite easily to tell as well because they start with a CM. So we've got get CM site here. We've got set CM boundary. So if we're trying to find commandlets that are Config Manager related, it's quite simple for us to go dash CM and find all those commandlets. I've got a link here for a TechNet list of all the commandlets. Some of the links on that particular TechNet page are pretty dodgy. But again, it's the PowerShell team who kind of manage it. There's not much we can do about it. And finally, we can list commandlets. So if you want to see all the commandlets, and we're going to see that in a demo in a second, we can use the get command commandlet and just show all the commandlets for our Config Manager module. Okay, quick demo. Okay, so all I want to do is connect to Config Manager and run a get site. That's about it. So if we clear this out, the first thing we need to do is import the module. Import dash module. Again, I'm going to let autocomplete do all the work. I'm going to go C, program files. Again, it's going to be x86 because it's 32-bit. We're going to go Microsoft Configuration Manager, admin console, bin. You'll get really used to this. And if I just type conf, we'll find the configuration manager PSD1. So all we got to do is run that, hit F5, and we've now loaded the module. In a second. There we go, that's a bit slow. So that was the first step. Second step was set location. Typing under pressure. Prize my site code. Again, I'm just going to run this one particular line, and we're going to see the context actually change from the C users administrator to PS Pry. So this is one way we can tell that we're connected to our primary site. Generally, if you've got a multi-tier hierarchy, so you've got your CAS and multiple primary sites underneath, you're going to be wanting to connect to your CAS, but in this situation, we're going to be on the PRY. So now that we're connected, we're just going to do a get CM site. So straight away, you can see that get CM is really handy because we've got all the list of the CM commandlets, and we can just type site. And we should get our site code and so forth back. So we can see our build number, we can see the installation directory. This wasn't easy to do when you're looking at Config Manager. So for the guys who are integrators in the room, just think about how we could use something like this to pipe out as-built docs to get install locations, to get build numbers, all that sort of stuff, without having to manually go and click properties and so forth. The other thing I wanted to do was show you the list of commandlets as well. So if we go get command, and the module we want was our Configuration Manager module. If we run that, we're going to get a whole bunch of our commands there. Anybody has a guess of how many commandlets we've got available with the Config Manager module? 100? It's a lot. It's heaps. You can see there's unlock, there's start, there's stop. Again, because PowerShell is awesome and we've got objects everywhere, let's do a count on it. 511. So we've got 511 commandlets. Pretty cool. Lots and lots of stuff we can do. A lot of them are going to be start and stop or do this and don't do that, unlock this and lock that. But there's 511 different particular commandlets that we've got available for Config Manager alone. Awesome? Okay. All right, so that's the boring stuff done now. We can start looking at some demos. Again, key commandlets. These two are so important, the import module and set location. I've got a bunch of scripts on my blog, and I'm constantly getting comments going, they won't run. You've got an import module, you've got a set site. Really important. And this one's cool as well, the get command. Remember that one. If you're trying to find that commandlet that you know that you can do, what was that collection commandlet? We can use this here. Again, demo scripts at this URL. Each of these URLs are unique, by the way, so if you've got your laptop on you, keep a track of them. Demos. So I said we've got three scenario-based demos. And the first demo is going to be a more simplistic one, and that's going to be based on collections, so managing some collections. So the scenario is this. We're Contoso, like all the other demos you've seen this week. We're adding a new data center. So we've got rapid growth. We're now going to have a Melbourne data center. We're a Sydney-based company. And our boss wants us to create a collection for every single subnet in that particular data center. So we want to create a collection. We want to create a dynamic rule. For 200 particular subnets, it's going to be a bit of a pain. And it's going to, again, take you 4 days. And right finger's going to get sore from right clicking. So we want to use PowerShell. Let's click across back to that demo machine and we'll have a look at some scripts. So I'm just going to import my scripts because you don't want to watch me type for the next hour. Okay. So I want to show you the commandlets that we're going to be using for this particular scenario. The first two things we're going to do, we're going to, of course, import the module and set the location. Again, we're going to import it. We're going to set it back to price, so we know that we're connected to our primary site. The first commandlet that we're going to have to use to achieve this using PowerShell is going to be our new CM device collection commandlet. So we can see here, new CM device collection. Now that we've got, in 2012, more of a user-based targeting system, we have two different commandlets for creating collection. One's going to be a new CM user collection, one's going to be a new CM device collection. We can't have users and devices in the same collection like we could in 2007. 2012 stops us from doing that. So the commandlet's our new CM device collection. In 2012, again, we need to have a limiting collection, as we all know in the room, obviously. So we need to specify a limiting collection in 2012. It's a requirement. The next thing I'm going to do is give it a name. So this is my new collection name with all computers in 10.10.10.0. And then a refresh type is going to be constant update. So this is going to enable our collection to have incremental collection updates. That's that little tick box that means we're going to update our collections every 5 minutes by default. We can set schedules and so forth in here, but it's like an extra long command line. So we'll just run with constant update. So if I just open up my Config Manager console and we'll show you how this runs. I haven't used this hosted platform yet, so we'll see how it's running. Device collections, we should just have some fairly basic, simple collections. I do have a whole bunch of devices and so forth in here. They're all just dummy devices, so we're not going to see too much coming out of them. But if we run this particular commandlet, we should create a collection. There we go. We can see that the shell's returned a whole bunch of information. We've got a collection ID and so forth. And if we come back into the console, we'll click away and click back to device collections, we should have a new collection called All Computers in 10.10.10.0. Okay? So that's as simple as it is to create a new collection without having to run through that wizard and confirm and next. That collection is basically useless to us at the moment, though, because we don't have any members in there. We generally try and suggest for you guys not to use direct memberships when it comes to collections, because direct memberships are bad. When we rebuild machines, we get new SM BIOS GUIDs, and all of a sudden, collection memberships don't mean anything. So we want to create a query collection. So our next step is to go to demo 2, and that's to add a collection membership rule. So to create a collection membership rule with a query, we're going to use add CM device collection query membership rule. That's the worst name for a commandlet ever. So the first thing we're doing is pointing it to that new collection. So our collection name is the one that we've just created, which was our all computers in 10.10.10.0. The next thing we're going to do, you guys would have done a billion times, is use our query expressions. And this is just the same sort of query expressions you guys are using at the moment when you're running through this. So it's going to be, select star from our system where IP subnets is like 10.10.10.0. So this is just your normal WQL. Everybody's familiar with this. The next thing we need to do is, of course, give that the rule name. So that's going to come up with our rule name 10.10.10 subnet query. So I'll run this one. It doesn't return anything for us. That's all right. So if I come back to our collection over here, we've got our all computers in 10.10.10.0. If I right-click and go back over to our properties, we should now see a membership rule in our membership rule, and it should be called 10.10.10 subnet query. Okay? Just to prove I'm not faking, let's have a look at the query. And we can see that the subnets is like 10.10.10.0. Of course, we can create multiple rules. Most of the time, you are going to have multiple rules. All we need to do is give that a different rule name. Execute that. We should now see two rules with the same subnet. Pretty straightforward. Cool. So while that's cool, that's fun, we don't want to obviously update that query 200 times for every single one of our subnets, so we want to do a bit more smarts around it. So the next thing I'm going to do is use our friend import CSV. So import CSV is going to grab all of the objects in a particular CSV file, and it's going to store it into a variable for us, and then we're going to use that variable to create a whole bunch of collections. Import CSV works really simply. If I just run this one, we're just going to set the location back to our file system. Don't necessarily need to do that, but I think it's probably the nice thing to do. You can see this CSV file has got 200 subnets. I've given each one of them an ID. It's got a subnet name, and it's got a particular subnet on that 10.10 subnet space. Again, we've got 200. Each one of them, it's just a dummy file I've created, really. It's SQL 2008 servers, development servers, etc., etc. Just reading that file into the console isn't really helpful, though. So we're going to, again, like we saw in that first demo, we're going to store that into a variable. So our CSV subnets variable is now filled with all those particular lines in our CSV file. So again, if I return this, CSV subnets, it should pipe all that output to the console now. There we go. And of course, we can do some interesting queries with it as well. So the first one up here is going to look for an ID. So all I'm doing is I'm loading all those subnets, then I'm piping it into the where clause. So where our particular ID is equal to 100, we're going to return just that one line. So if I run this, we're going to get just our ID 100. Okay? The next thing we can do, being a variable array, we're storing every single one of these lines as a different object in your CSV variable here, is we can run the 100th line. What ID will come back if I run this? 101? Exactly. Because when we're working with arrays, we're going to start at 0. So if I'm looking for our number 100, we're going to start back with the 101 ID in that particular text file. PowerShell's cool. So finally, we want to actually do the work. So this is our final script. It's seven lines of code, and we're going to create 200 collections. Each one of those collections is going to be unique. Each one of those collections is going to have a unique rule with a particular subnet in that collection as a membership rule. So all we're doing is we're importing that that particular CSV file. We're connecting back to our config manager site, and then we're just doing a simple for each. So all we're doing is every single object in this particular CSV file, we're going to perform a new CM device collection, and we're going to do an add CM device collection query membership rule. In terms of names, let's go through the two commandlets actually. A limiting collection name is going to be all systems. Again, we could dynamically do this if we want. Our name is actually going to be the subnet name. So we can see that collection object is going to return to this subnet here. Okay? So when we create our collection, it's going to be Melbourne DC2 - SharePoint servers. Refresh type again is going to be, Refresh type is going to be a constant update again because I don't want to put an actual rule in there. And then we're going to have to add that particular membership rule. Our friend, the AD, the add CM device collection query membership rule. Collection name is going to be the same as above. So we've just created a new collection. We're going to query that same one again. Our query selection is going to be a query expression is going to be a little bit different this time though. This is going to be select star from our system. Very similar, but this time we're going to wrap this collection.subnet object in. So this particular subnet piece is now going to be the subnet that we're looking for in our rule. Okay? And that's all we've got to do. If I run this now, we're going to get 200 collections. So this will take a little bit of time, but you can see straight up that we're creating some collections and we're calling it Melbourne DC2 IS server subnet. This is cycling through. Again, it's going to take a little while because we've got 200 objects in there. But while that's happening, if I bring you across to that console, again, we'll select away and select back. We should start seeing some collections. So already we've got maybe 15 collections. If I open up this domain controller subnet 20, go to our membership rule, we've got a 10.10.16 query, again, straight from our CSV file. And our criteria is that 10.10.16 subnet. Okay? One more just for fun. IS server subnet 18. Is going to have a different membership rule. We can see that's a different subnet. So within about 10 minutes of you writing this and having one CSV file, we've just created 200 collections. A bit easier than running through the console? Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to cancel this here because it's going to take forever. But we can have a quick look at how many it's created. Yeah, it's not bad. All right, so that's our first demo. Good? Okay, just to recap, we only used two config manager-based commandlets in that script. First one was our new CM device collection. Second one, after we've created the collection, is going to be our add CM device collection query membership rule, and that script's available on this URL. So our next demo is going to be on packages. We're going to get a little bit more complex in terms of our script here. I did a practice delivery with George, our other PFE in Melbourne for Config Manager, just the other day. And he stood up and applauded after this demo, so I'm kind of expecting the same from you all. You'll see. Okay, so I told you we've got a scenario. The scenario this time is going to be we're in a reasonable size organisation and we've got contractors who are packages. Everybody's worked with packages who are contractors before. There are probably a couple in here already. You know, you're dodgy. We want them to create a package and that's all. We don't want them to be using Config Manager. We don't want them touching our console. We don't want them having even application author. All we want them to do is sit at their desk in the corner and create MSIs. That's it, yeah? Basically. Right. So this demo, my idea was to get that guy in the corner. He creates an MSI. By standard with our corp policy is for all of our MSIs to be setup.msi. They're all going to have the same switches because he's using his MSI Studio or whatever apps he's using. And we just want him to dump it into a folder. And then we want to run our scripts. We want to do it ourselves. We want to import that MSI file and deploy it to our users because we don't trust anybody else to do it. So the idea was we'll get him to create a folder, MSI, we do the rest, okay? Let's flip across and let's have a look at some demo. All right, so we've got to set up MSI here, so we'll just pretend for a couple of seconds that we're a packager. We've got to set up the MSI. This happens to be Adobe. That's actually like acroread underscore whatever it is. I'm sure you guys can tell me. I've renamed it to setup.exe, which you can use a quiet switch for that. And we've got a particular directory here called new packages. So this might be a file share. Packages sitting at his computer. We want him to dump this particular setup file into a folder here. What we get our packager to do is create a new folder, and we're going to give it some standard information. So we're going to call this folder Adobe. We're going to call it Reader. We're going to call the version 11 and our language, which is English. So we get him to do this by standard. Again, we could get a script to do this as well. I did have a look at trying to pull out particular information out of the MSIs. It wasn't very easy, so I thought, no, we'll just create a folder manually. So this guy comes along, he creates his folder, and then he copies his MSI into it. In terms of this demo, that's all he does. He now moves across to his next package, and he starts working on the next package, okay? Kind of a utopian sort of scenario for you guys, I'm sure. We're going to run open our PowerShell ISE. I'm going to grab some scripts. Demo 4. Okay. So I'm going to step by step through this script. Again, we could grab this script, we could run it on a batch. So every half an hour, we could run this script and do all our work for us. But I'm going to run it section by section so we can see what's happening. Right, so our guys drops our folder and our file into our new package here. First thing I'm doing at the top here is error action preference equals stop. So by default, this particular variable is set to continue. So what this does is stops our script if there's any failure whatsoever. So you know when you run a PowerShell script and it just keeps chunking up with red text, keeps going and going and going, something's failing, but we're just going to keep running through that script. If we set this variable to stop, as soon as we receive one error, we're going to stop the script. The reason why I put this in here is because I don't want, with my copy item when I'm moving files, to delete that item if something goes wrong. Right? So we've got this copy-item commandlet, which is moving our file from one location to another. Directly after that, I'm doing a remove item. If for some reason that copy item fails, I don't want to just delete the file. Okay? So I'm telling our script to stop. I'm then setting our location to C because we want to work with the file system. I'm then setting a couple of variables. So our new package location variable is that directory our guy's dropping his folder and file into. We just saw that new packages share. Our second variable there is our corp source location. So this is going to be your config manager source location. So not only are we automating all this, we're getting our packager away from our corporate source. Our corporate config manager source directory. He doesn't have any access, he doesn't have read, write, we're going to do it all in PowerShell. So obviously we don't want our packages being distributed from the new packages directory, so what we're going to do is we're going to copy that item. So we're going to grab the folder and we're going to grab the MSI file or whatever's in there, all the source files, and we're going to copy it across to our corp config manager source location. It's going to do everything. So I'm just going to run this part of the script now, real quick. If I have a look in our new packages directory, it's gone. And if I now have a look in our corporate source directory, we've now got our folder and our setup file, okay? It's just a simple copy, basically. It's a PowerShell version of copy. So then now that we've got the file over there, we want to do something with it. So I was saying before that we've got in that directory name, we've got Adobe Reader, English, and 11. So what I've got is I've got a manufacturer, I've got a package name, I've got a version, and I've got a language. So all I want to do is strip those out of the particular name and store those in variables so that we can use them later. So all we're doing here is a couple of little things, just storing a whole bunch of values. If we now have a look at our package manufacturer, for example, I'll just run this particular line. We're going to see Adobe. And if we have a look at our version, we should be able to see 11 here as well. So we've just got that from the folder, no input needed. Now that we've got that information, we can start doing some stuff with Config Manager. Okay? The first two things we had to do, import module, set location. Let's run those. Line 16 is going to actually do some Config Manager stuff. So this time, we're not using our device or our collection commandlet, we're using our new CM package commandlet. First thing we want to do is set a path. So this is going to be the directory where our package is stored. And that's our package store path, which is another variable that we stored up here. All we've done is called it the corp source location, which is our packages directory, and then the folder name. The next thing we're going to give the package a name. It's going to be called package name, which is going to be Adobe. We've got our manufacturer, we've got our version, we've got our language. And I've also put a nice little description here in here as well. So if you need to have a look later on down the track, what happened, who created this package? Well, we did. We automated this package. It was our fault because it didn't work. So let's go ahead and run that line. There we go, we've run. So let's have a quick look. What we can see is a package ID, so we've created a package obviously. We've got our source path, which again was our source directory, packages, and then Adobe Reader. A little bit of other metadata. If I now go across into our software library and have a look at our packages, we'll now have a new package called Reader. Okay? So our packager hasn't touched anything, he's just dropped a file in and we've now got a new package. We've got no program at the moment. It's not sitting on a DP, so we probably should do that as well. So the next part of our script is going to create that that program for us. So while we've got the package, we've got the files, we need to set up something, right? So the next thing we do is our new CM program. We, of course, define the package name, so that was our reader. Our standard program is going to be, the standard program name is just going to be set up this, so this is what's prompted to the user, set up Adobe Reader, whatever it's going to be. And then we set a command line. And because that corp policy is setup.msi, we don't have to really think about this. We just feed in setup.msi and away she goes. We could, of course, have a whole bunch of different options and look for an MSI file and look for what the quiet switches are and all that sort of stuff. But for this demo, we're just going to make it simple. Let's go home and we'll run this particular line. There we go. We've got a new line in there for our program, and if we select programs on that reader, we now have a program applied to that particular package. Okay? All good? Next thing we want to do though is add that to a DP. So we're going to use the start content CM content distribution. Again, same package name. This time I'm using the distribution point group name. We can list individual DPs if you want these packages just to go out to, you know, Southeast Asia versus EMEA. Here I'm using the all DPs distribution point group, so this package is going to get added to all my DPs around the hierarchy. Let's run this. And if we now go back to our summary, we should start seeing it yellow. So we've just added that package to a DP. It's going to take a little while for that to happen. So that's cool. We've now got a package program and it's sitting on a DP. Next thing we want to do is create a collection for that particular package. So we've got a new Adobe version. Let's create a collection. You've all seen this new CM device collection at the moment. We're going to call this collection install and then dash a whole bunch of variables. Limiting collection again. We've seen this. Let's create that. We've now got our install Adobe Reader collection. And finally, to close off the demo, we're going to deploy that application to that collection. So we could add in our own rules, we could add our direct memberships, we could do whatever we need to with that collection. But what we want to do is whatever computer goes in there is going to get the newest version of Adobe. So start CM package deployment, we're defining a package name. Again, it's just going to be Reader. Standard programs is going to be that setup file, so it's going to do a setup MSI. The collection name we're looking for is the same as the collection name we had before, and this time I'm making it available. So we could obviously set this as a required deployment as well, so I'd prefer to do an available in this particular scenario. If we just run that, we're going to create a deployment. back to our software library and our reader, we can see it should have turned green, and we can see our deployment is now pointing to the reader. So within that script, we have created, within 20 lines of code, we have grabbed a file, grabbed a folder, moved it across to our content source, we've created a package, we've created a program, we've created a collection, and we've created a deployment, all deployed to our new collection, which is our install Adobe Reader. And that's it. Applause. Thanks. So I'm sure everybody would like this sort of script to do all the work for them, yeah? No? Yeah? Okay. Well, George was right. Okay. Cool. So that's the second demo in terms of your packages. Let's quickly flip back to the deck. Key commandlets. We're using a few more commandlets this time. We've got our new CM package, new program. We're going to start the content distribution. We're then going to create a collection, and we're going to deploy it. Script available at the URL. Okay. Next one is app approval. So it's show of hands, is anybody doing user-targeted applications with approval at the moment? A few of you, yeah? Are you using Service Manager for your approval workflows? No? It's too hard? Yeah. So app approval, let's go back. App approval in 2012 is really cool. So with 2012, we really wanted you guys to start deploying applications to users. You would have heard this over and over again, user-based deployments, all that sort of stuff. The idea is for us to give a list of applications available for a user and let the user decide what they need to install for their job. This is the whole user-centric computing that we're all looking for. You know, am I logging onto a Surface? Am I logging onto an iPad? All that sort of stuff. There are scenarios, though, where we want to approve and deny applications, and that's going to be when applications cost a lot of money, generally. So you've got AutoCAD. Do we want the receptionist installing AutoCAD? Probably not. It's going to cost you a lot of money. Same as Photoshop, same as even Adobe Acrobat. Cost you money, we might not want to do that. So we've given you a handy little approval box. So when we deploy an application, we can say this particular application requires approval from an admin somewhere. So if I open up the software catalog, so I'm sure you've all seen the application catalog, yeah? Yep. So this is the application catalog. Your user would log on. They would see all these applications at the moment, and they would start installing whatever they wanted, right? We have a requires approval over here. So you can see that yes, 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 no. So if a user goes through and selects this, requests the application, we'll do that. The user can put in a message, so can I please have this application, whatever it is, and then that application won't install until an admin goes in and approves it. So in terms of the workflow to actually manage these app approvals, it's not very good, and it's kind of something that we know is an issue, but it's not a big priority to fix, to be honest. So when that app approval comes through, this is the screen that we get. So we get this approval requests, and we get our applications. We can see the user who's requested them. And all we can do is right-click and approve or deny, basically. These ones are all denied, so. But we should be able to see the message, that sort of thing. We can tell the user, no, don't, you can't have that. Supply me with a PO before that can happen, all that sort of stuff. But you guys as admins don't want to be the gatekeeper to applications either. You don't want to have to go into this console every couple of hours and approve and deny applications, do we? So as I said, in Config Manager, there's no inbuilt workflow piece for us to be able to ask the right people to install the application or not. And that's where Service Manager generally comes in. It actually works really well. It's just really complicated to get going. So Service Manager can feed in using Orchestrator these approvals. We can do something like an AD lookup for a manager position on that AD object, send an email to that manager with a URL that the manager can select and approve the application. But who wants to do that? And it's not a Service Manager demo, it's a PowerShell demo. So what I thought would be cool is one of our customers has got an asset manager. It's somebody who speaks with finance, works out who's got a PO, which user can have which application. And what we did is we created some custom security scopes so that user could only get the approvals window. But the user was kind of sick of getting calls from users saying, I've got that PO, why haven't you approved my app? And it's because this asset manager's busy doing other things. So what I wanted to do was give the approval manager a way to approve and deny applications really quickly without having to even have the config manager console on their computer. And that's where this monster script came from. I'm a bit proud of this script as because I'm not really a PowerShell person. It looks pretty cool though. Okay, so this one's a little bit longer. We've got 80 lines of code. Do you want to see it work? Yep. Okay, so this user wants demo app one. We've denied it 3 times already. The user's still saying, no, I want it. So they're going to submit that particular application. So now what would have to happen is our asset manager would come across the console, they'd select out of approval request, they'd select in and they go, hey, this bloody user has requested this application again, and right-click and deny it. My script will get rid of that, well, the need for that anyway. So let's just run that. We'll get a couple of things. We're going to get a pop-up. So the first thing that we get, and you can see it at the bottom, goes really quickly, is a balloon tip. So we all love balloon tips. That just holds up for 3 seconds. If you select that balloon tip, we're going to see what's going to happen. We also get a notification icon in the bottom right-hand system tray as well, which is here. You know what, I'll just... So we've got a nice little green tick here. And when we select this, we're going to get a nice little pop-up. And now we're going to allow that user to either approve or deny our application request. So this is something that I would be running as a batch script on a particular asset manager's computer. And every time a user runs an application request, every 30 minutes, we're going to pop up with a bunch of things saying approve or deny, approve or deny.
Could you have a push?
Sorry?
Could you have a push as in real time? So I request an application.
We could do all that, yeah. Yep. It'd be really inefficient, but we could probably do it. Yeah. A user doesn't want to sit there all day hitting approve and deny and stuff as well anyway. Anyway, this is, again, my dodgy scripting skills. It's working. I'm sure you could do it like that. So you can see a couple of things here as well. I've got administrator has requested the demo app one application. So not only am I prompting to say, hey, there's an application request here, I'm letting the asset manager or the config manager admin know which user it is and what application they want. Okay? So let's go ahead and deny this one. We deny it, it's going to just go away, that's it. And if we go back over to the console, again, we'll select away and select back. We can see that we've denied the application. Cool? So in terms of the config manager side, for this particular script, there's 3 commandlets that we're using that are config manager related only, and there's 77 other lines of code that do all the other work. So let's have a quick look at it. The first thing we need is our Windows form, so we add this assembly. So this is all done in Windows forms. There's the WCF as well, which is a lot sexier and nicer, but I didn't have time. We're going to import the module and set our location just like we always do. The next thing we're going to do is do a get CM approval request. So this is the first of our 3 config manager commandlets, and all this is doing is going off to our config manager server and saying, return me a list of all the approval requests that have been lodged. The next thing we do is have a look at this current state piece of information. So if I quickly go, let's show you. If I run that get CM approval request, we can see that we've got 4, even though we only had 1, and we've denied it, so it shouldn't be an approval request, right? Wrong. So with the get CM approval request, we get all different types of CM approval requests. We get 4 different types, in fact. We get ones that have been denied, we get the ones that have been approved, we get the ones that have been requested, and we get the ones that have been cancelled. So the ones that we were actually after is where the current state equals 1, which means it's been requested. Two means cancelled, three means approved, four means denied, I think. So all we're doing is returning all of the... Sorry? Oh, I thought somebody was fixing my mistakes. So all we're doing here is returning all the ones that are in approve equals yes, basically. We've got none at the moment. Let's just quickly ask for that application again, and I'll show you. So if I run this now, I should have one being returned. And there we go. So we can see the user, et cetera, et cetera. The next thing we're doing is I'm just looking for all of them. So this pop-up is going to happen multiple times. So if you've got 10,000 users and you got one person who's going to be approving these, you're going to get a lot of pop-ups. So it might not scale that well. That's where you might want to look at Service Manager maybe. The next thing we do, so every time we get one come through, we run a pop-up form. You'll see that in a second. This is our program, basically. Next thing we do is we're going to strip a bunch of information from it. So I don't want to see contoso/administrator as a user. We know what domain we're on. I just want the administrator. We're also going to have a look at the application. Next thing we do is we do our notification icon. So you can see here this tick ICO file. All it is this file sitting here. So you could have your own logo if you wanted that. All we're doing is creating that particular notification icon. And you'll see that the new app approval request available when you hover over that. Next thing we're doing is we're going to create that form. So this is the actual rectangle box that we pop up. We've got a background to it. So I've created a little background.jpg file here. That's the background for it. Again, corporate colors if marketing want that. We're then going to draw it, so we're going to put it into that that system just above the system tray. We're going to do a bit of formatting and so forth. Next thing we're doing is we're writing a label. So the label is the actual text that we're displaying. So you can see here that we've got those two variables that I set before. So the request user has requested the request app variables. So again, administrator wants demo 1 or demo 2 app. We're doing just a little bit of, making it look a little bit more pretty than the default fonts and so forth, and all we're doing is just displaying that text. The next two sections are our buttons. So we've got an approve button and we've got a deny button, and this is actually where we call those the proper config manager commandlets. So the first one is our approve button. We can see the word is the text is approve. This time we're adding a click. We're setting our location back to prior just in case we're not. And this is our commandlet. This is a second commandlet that we've got to approve our application. So all we're doing is an approve-CM approval request, and we're piping in our unique ID for that particular approval request, and we're adding a comment as well. So I added comments when we created those the packages before. This time we're going to add it for our automated approval. We could prompt that particular asset manager to type something in, or we could do whatever you really need to do. Once that's done, all we're doing is closing the form and getting rid of that notification icon. The second one is obviously just deny CM approval request. So this is if we click the deny button, we're going to deny it. It's exactly the same. Finally, all we're doing is showing the balloon and then we're registering the event and that's it. Cool? So that's my script for a semi-automated way to do app approvals. Okay. One problem I did find when I was writing this is that it's not very nice in terms of launching a PowerShell script in a batch format as a scheduled task. You get a pop-up window, the PowerShell window pops up, and that would annoy users, yeah? So I've wrapped it into a little VB script to do the work for us. So all it's doing, again, is running... Awesome, yeah? Hopefully it gets fixed one day. So I'm running the PowerShell.exe with no logo and all that sort of stuff and my script. I'm using the x86 version of PowerShell because if it's 64-bit, it's not going to run. And then it'll run away. So if I requested that app again, didn't I? So in my task scheduler, all I would do is set this to run every half an hour. Disabled at the moment. I'm just going to enable it and it's going to run. It's going to run that VB script, which is going to launch our PowerShell, but it's going to hide it from us. We're going to run that, and we're going to get a pop-up. There we go. Deny, and away she goes. And that's it. Cool? All right. Yeah, I like that. All right, so in terms of our key commandlets again, I told you there was only three config manager commandlets, so it's 77 lines of code just to show a UI. I know it sounds a bit hard, but these are the three important ones. Get our requests. We want to approve or deny them. Again, that full script's there. Download it if you want. And see how you go. Okay, so five short demos in 5 minutes. We've got time? Yeah, we've got time. We can do it in 5 minutes. So I've got five little commandlets. One is probably the most poorly written command that you'll ever see, but it works. Let's scoot across back to our ISE, and we're going to grab our final demos. I know it's getting late, and everybody's getting thirsty. Okay. That's six. We want one. Okay. So demo one is listing our drivers in our boot images. So this is a common complaint. Which drivers have I got in my boot image? You can right-click and go show me drivers, but you can't select it. You can't copy that text out. It's next to impossible to report on what drivers are actually part of your boot images. Yep. This one does a very simple get CM boot image. All it's doing is returning our drivers. So if I run this, it's going to list all of our drivers in a really handy looking format. We'll just run the variable we piped it to. So we can see that the default returns as a horrible looking driver source. It doesn't actually give us the name of the drivers. So this is where the worst scripting you'll ever see comes in, which is a for each in terms of matching our driver. So if you can't tell by this, all I'm doing is I'm getting every driver and then I'm trying to match that name or that path against every driver in your driver catalog. So if you've got lots of drivers in your driver catalog, it's going to take like 45 minutes to run. I know, it's horrible. I told you it's horrible. But if I run this, it's going to take forever, and it's even trying to stop this is going to take forever. On my laptop, it took like 3 or 4 minutes for it to pop up. But what we should see is the actual driver name popping up in a second. Let's hopefully... So while we're waiting for that to happen, I hate that window. Let's have a look at our boot image, and we'll actually just have a look at what driver. So all I was looking for is that Pry Quad 05, which is our X64 boot image. This is the drivers section here that we can't sort of copy. And the first one we should get up is that 1394 OHCR compliant host driver. Come on. Look at that. One script. I told you I wasn't a dev. Let's let that run. Let's go across to the next one. So that's our first one. That's again, it's going to be on the URL that you saw before. The next one is our refresh types. So can anybody tell me what's the supported maximum limits of collections with the incremental updates check? 200. Did everybody know that? So you got 14,000 collections in there and you've enabled the incremental updates on every single one of them? Yeah, probably, because it works this time in 2012. That's not supported. We only support up to 200. So when you call up the PSS guys over in Shanghai and you say my collections aren't updating, they're going to ask how many have you got enabled, and you're going to say 14,000, and then they're going to go, it's unsupported configuration, turn them off. So this commandlet is going to tell all the collections that have got... That's still running, that's horrible. No. Good answer? No, horrible answer. No, so we've asked the same thing. You know what? It's even worse. So by default, it runs every 5 minutes. We asked the guys in Seattle, the product group guys, what if we change that to 10 minutes? Can we then have 400 collections with incremental updates? Because that's what it's been tested to, and they went numb. So they're just not going to support it. It's not a problem. Do it. Tick it. It's fine. It's just if you did want to be supported, you got to change it back, that's all. So I'll show you how you can change it back. Is that shell finished yet? Yeah, there we go. So this is just going to return all those collections with incremental updates set. There we go. So all those ones that are set before, remember? If I now go back and quickly change that 10.10.10 one that we created in the first demo, it should disappear from our list. This is that. But this is the tech box I was talking about, the incremental updates, for those who don't know. If we run that again, we shouldn't have that 10.10.10 collection in there anymore. So when you call up support and they go, "No, we're not going to support you," all you need to do is run that, pipe it into a change collection, and change the actual tick box, and then they have to support you. Okay? So that's number two. Number three, for the guys who do OSD, I see you guys in the middle, the ClearPixie cache is a pain in the butt. Having to right-click on that computer every time and go clear the Pixie required deployment. This commandlet will do it across a whole collection. So if you've got a build collection and they've all failed, we can run that and it's going to clear it. 606. Next one is for the integrators in the room, you want to export all the boundaries. So big organizations will have lots and lots of boundaries, like literally thousands of boundaries. Boundary for all of you know is a IP address subnet or an AD site name or something like that. We want to export that to a CSV file. The getcm boundary is the commandlet that we want. So we run getcm boundary, and it's going to list all of our boundaries. I want to make it look pretty, so I want a display name, value, and site system. That's going to display all of our boundaries from within the console. And then we can pipe it out to our little friend export CSV and into our temp directory to give us a nice spreadsheet. So if you want a list of all your subnet boundaries or your AD boundaries, this is how you do it. Boundaries.csv, import that into Excel and your management are pretty happy. Again, what a great way to finish off an as-built doc for you guys who do this all the time. Last one is lock CM objects. Has everybody had the problem where the config manager console crashes and then you can't get back to a package or you can't back to an application? So we have a commandlet to clear that now. Yeah, I see you going, yeah, awesome. So lock CM object. This is another reason why we might want to use lock CM object is if we don't want people playing around with stuff that we're still kind of thinking, are we going to deploy this or not? So lock CM object will lock an application or certain objects anyway. So if we go into our software library and we'll go back to our demo one app, right click, help desk guy goes in and he starts changing properties and all that sort of stuff and you're not very happy. Right? If we run that lock CM object on that particular app, we go back to the console, right click, properties, we're going to get a prompt saying that somebody's locked this object, we can't change it. We can read only, cool, no worries. We'll get a read only version of that application, but we're not going to be able to change anything. This unlock CM object is the commandlet that you want to run if you have that console crash. I haven't seen the console in SP1 crash that often though, so if you're crashing, you're probably doing something wrong anyway. But if we run that unlock object, we can then go back and edit it.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure. No, so the PowerShell module never goes direct to the database. We always go via the SMS provider. We always do the right thing. It's basically, we could do all this in 2007 and RTM, but it was all WMI stuff, right? So all we're doing is wrapping all of our WMI queries around with some nice little verb noun style implementation of it. So, no, against best practice and supportability to directly query the database. RTM, I had one customer who did exactly, you can't do anything about it, right? I think like in RTM it was 30 minutes, it would hold that lock or something. So if in RTM that console crashed and you opened it back up again and that file lock was on there, you'd have to wait 30 minutes to be able to come back and use it. So there was nothing else you could do but change that, that value in the database. Just don't do it now if you got SP1. Cool, so that's my demos. Everybody learn something?
Yep.
Cool. Key commandlets again, you can read all that. We're coming up on close. In finishing up, so I really hope you're not going to walk out here now as PowerShell experts. You're not going to walk out here and start, you know, get rid of the console. I'll do everything from the command line now. But you should have enough, I suppose, enough interest in it now to think, what can I actually automate a little bit more? What can I put a nice UI around instead of using the console? Do we need our help desk having the full console? Maybe not. We can do this. Config Manager Dogs is our blog. So at the end of this, I'm going to post the all the content. So they'll have all the URLs for that script. So if you go there, MSPFE as well. That's the PFEs in Australia. You'll get all our content filtered through there. Related content. So I know everybody wants to go for a drink, but Neil Peterson's session is on next, which is a horrible time. But Neil is a PFE that we flew over from the States, who's a config manager guy slash orchestrator guy, who's doing a really good session on patching clusters using Orchestrator. So bring one up, patching it, bring one down, patching it. That's on next. I think it's in Arena 1A maybe. I don't know who's doing this PowerShell demo extravaganza. Later I'll be in a bar somewhere. Tomorrow I'll be in the premier room, in the hall. So come and find me. Winner Sculpt mouse. Nobody wants the mouse, but can you fill in the survey for us, please? I know every session says fill in the survey, but the more surveys we receive with green ticks, the more time I get to come out next year and put together other content like this. So please fill in the surveys. It's really important. And that's it. Thank you. Questions?